The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
From a nightclub at the end of the world, I'm Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. All weekend long, I've been watching the news, and all the networks are prepping us for some major, serious economic events, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a major sell-off in the market next week. And it's very clear, as I've been saying on the World News Desk at Collapse Net, we're well over 3,300 members now. We're growing because we've been getting it so right, and you've been seeing the value of what we bring you there. It's clear tonight that we've used all the damn superlatives. Maybe Jim can come up with one, but we're at a place now where things are going to change very, very rapidly, and it could be happening as soon as next week. What is happening in Wisconsin, as I have said clearly, is a test case. I've been writing since November on the World News Desk at CollapseNet that the bill to allow states to file bankruptcy was going to move forward. And when that passed, we would see simultaneous bankruptcies from the four or five biggest contenders, Michigan, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, California. Let's go to five major contenders. And Wisconsin is a test case, and clearly, as I have been saying since November 2, this is the all-out push to break the unions. It's a blitzkrieg, and the battles are on now in Ohio. There's other signs around the country, and I received word this morning from a public employee friend in New Jersey that over the weekend stuff was coming out of the governor's office talking about cutting public employee pensions, etc. So here we are. I feel like playing the Lionel Richie song, "Hey, we're going to have a party all night long." But it's really good to have tonight a really special guest, a guy for whom I have an enormous amount of respect. I could spend like the whole show doing an intro for him, which is probably not a good idea. He's written two really good books that are my favorites. One is The Long Emergency. I don't know, it's about 5 years old now, talking about the world we're living in today and we're coming to live in. But more importantly, a book that has been very dear to my heart called A World Made by Hand, because it's a novel, and it's a future novel. But in that, James Howard Kunstler really conveys his sense of care and love for the human spirit, and he lets a lot of that shine through. And when I read that book, I guess about a year and a half ago, Jim sent me a copy. It just gave me hope. And, of course, when Jim's flaming, of course, you might think something else, too. James Howard Kunstler, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Jim.
Hi there, Mike.
How you doing, bud?
Actually, I'm fine. And we're about to get a blizzard or some kind of a snow dump here, but otherwise I'm in fine spirits.
Oh, that's good. Now, a lot of people are going to ask about this thing we did called the Prophets of Doom. Jim and I were two of six experts on a very expensive, very well done History Channel special, which has aired, as far as I know, exactly twice. It's supposed to run for like a month. I don't know what's happening with the show, but I think Jim stole the show with a line.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I did not. No.
Well,
all right. There were a lot of good guys on there, although there was one guy on the show who was really bizarre.
Yes. and there were a lot of moments you and I remember that didn't make the final cut, too, with Ugo. But you had a line in the show that something about all of these problems are very significant, and they're going to attack us like a pack of very hungry wolves.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember saying that, but I like wolves. I ain't against them. I was listening to you go over the litany of the news of the day. And, I confess, I was doing my taxes today, so I wasn't even paying that much attention to what was going on. But it is, I don't like to think of myself as an alarmist. I suppose people think I'm a prophet of doom, but I don't think of myself as an alarmist prophet of doom, but you know, things are looking kind of gnarly out there.
Yeah, they are.
I gotta agree with you. You know, things are looking kind of spooky.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people coming to that awareness. I've been real blessed since the documentary came out, Collapse, Jim. In that I've been asked all over the country to meet with groups, and doing this radio show, I meet such an amazing, wonderful array of people all over the map, who are all aware of we are at a true moment of choice here, but there is an awakening taking place, and for me, you and I have both been out on the peak oil circuit a long time, and we both carried some weight with that. Are you feeling the same relief I am, selfishly, that people aren't giving me a ration anymore for talking about this stuff?
I do think that there's something going on, although I must say that, you know, when, what's the metaphor, you know, when the dam bursts, when the critical mass is reached that, you know, in this country, that the American people get a whiff that there's a lot of things that are not working right, and they're all not working right at the same time. I think it's going to be a very sudden kind of sparkish kind of affair.
Mm-hmm.
This whole business in Wisconsin with people gathering at the State House and everything is kind of startling, because it's the first time in a decade or more, or at least since those economic meeting riots that took place in Seattle and also in Europe, I believe. But it's the first time in the U.S. that I remember in an awful long time that anybody has been out in the street doing anything.
Yeah.
I think that there's a very good chance that it will move from a condition of being unbelievably complacent to being quite startlingly violent.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. And by the way, I should have done this before. If you'd like to ask Jim Consular a question, or me even, you can call toll-free at 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly, lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and I will pick up your question here. Sorry, Jim, I had to throw that in because I'm sure there's people
Want... Do you get the feeling, too, that there's a sense of things sort of shifting very suddenly, that that people are going from a state of being completely uninterested, passive, and complacent, to all of a sudden being rather up in arms?
Yes, I even as I watch things like, and I've been watching Ron Paul closely. I had Cynthia McKinney on tape last week, but you know, Cynthia's cheering for Ron, and he's been saying a lot of really good, solid things lately that go right to the core of right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you get this sense. And one of the first things I thought when I saw all this happening in Wisconsin, I said, Michael, Madison has a good history of lefty progressive, you know, stuff, but Wisconsin has never been a seat of massive civil unrest. And the cheese is good, you know, that's what I wrote.
Yeah.
But
I actually don't remember, any particular street episode ever occurring in Wisconsin. The only thing that happened in our lifetime was the bombing of a university building by a student radical in about 1968 mm-hmm. or 70. And I don't think there was anybody in the building when it happened. So
now you and I are about the same age, and we were both alive in the 60s. And
yeah, I remember people in the street.
Oh, dope, do I? But you know what?
Although, it's totally unlike the America that we've known for the last 20 years.
That's true.
It seems like another planet sometimes, and it's hard for me to believe that the American public has taken all this abuse just lying down, just bending over and picking up the soap.
Well, I can speak for myself and say that I've been waiting for people to wake up since the POW MIA, since Iran-Contra, since savings and loans, since election 2000. But, they didn't jump up for any of that. But one of the things I did notice this week, and thinking back to the 60s, was that the biggest riots, and these were riots in which thousands of people were killed of the 60s, were in Detroit, Chicago, Newark, Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Those are the states that are just getting ready to go bankrupt.
And interesting.
So it's become pretty clear to me that Wisconsin is a test case, and I had that confirmed. In other words, that the Obama administration and I think the Republican, the Boehner in the House,
yeah.
are both on the same agenda here. They wanted to float the trial balloon to see what the response was in Wisconsin so that they could gauge what's going to be coming, because they have to do this quickly in a blitzkrieg. If they drag it out, we will be Egypt. We may be anyway. So it's a test case, and I got a confirmation. A friend of mine who's a SWAT team officer in New Jersey found out over the weekend that the New Jersey State House was starting to make moves on benefits and pensions in that state over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
You know, I don't really know the particulars of the bankruptcy law as they apply to states, other than the fact that states are not allowed to go bankrupt. Isn't that correct?
There is a bill now being moved by Newt Gingrich, who, of course, is not in the House now, but he's a front runner for the Republican nomination in 12.
I don't know if he's a front runner, but he's. I mean, people do take him seriously.
Yes, and he's really pushing a bill that will allow the states to go bankrupt.
Yeah, and he's not the only one.
Correct.
I don't know what the states are going to do if they can't. You know, I mean, they'll just default under some other label. But, you know, I mean, either you can pay your stuff or you can't pay your stuff.
We've been clipping stories on the World News Desk, you know, for a long time. And one of the ones I saw was that the state of in Illinois, many gas stations will no longer give gasoline to state highway patrol cars on their credit cards.
Oh, yeah, they haven't paid their vendors in the state of Illinois for 6 months. You know, they're like 6 months behind paying anybody. And by vendors, I don't mean the people who put the candy bar machines in the state legislature. I mean anybody who sells anything to the state of Illinois, either
right.
a service, a product, or something else. They don't get paid, and they haven't been paid for a long time.
And, no,
and they have almost no prospect of paying them. You know, so I really don't see how they're going to wiggle out of this. And but you know, reading the financial news in the USA is amazing. You know, there is absolutely no discussion of the intractable nature of this problem.
No, and that's the point that I make so clearly is that one of the things the unions have to get is that there's no pot of gold. There's no secret room where somebody's holding out a lot of cash. There's a lot of printed money that's becoming worthless in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But we can't give them anything.
Yeah, this is a struggle that neither side is really going to win. I mean, this is a lose-lose proposition, really. It's not a win-win. You know, we've been kind of infected with the BS of business and their happy talk. But the fact of the matter is, this is, you know, there are losses that are mounting up out there
yeah.
in all kinds of ways. There are financial losses, there are cultural losses, there are political losses. And part of the big part of the problem with what's going on now is that we won't recognize any of the losses. I mean, that's what the banking fiasco is all about,
mm-hmm.
is pretending that things have value that don't have any value. You know, namely a lot of certificates that are sitting in vaults.
We have a call, I believe, from, I hope he's online, William from Portland. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question, man. Hi, welcome.
Hey, thank you. I'm a Collapse Net member. You know, first of all, I just want to say thank you guys for the work that you did. I saw your movie Collapse about 2.5 months ago, and you know, I wanted to challenge the information in that movie, just you know, to purposes, and it's kind of it's led me down this rabbit hole. I like to, where I've been introduced to people like just Howard Kunstler, Chris Martinson, Richard Heinberg, and you know, I think it's fantastic the amount of people out there that have been following this, and
we've become the elders.
I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you. And
did you have a question?
Let you know the influence that you've had on my life. I've been double digging out of my garden all day today.
Great. Did you have a question for Jim or me?
Yes, I do. It's for your artistic side of you. Why do you guys see the oil, like oil painting, canvas making? What does that industry look like, post-peak oil paradigm? And the guitar string industry. What will that look like?
It's funny.
You want that, Jim?
Well, you know, I am actually quite a serious painter.
Oh, yes, that's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, well, frankly, I don't spend a whole lot of time agonizing over whether I'm going to be able to get a tube of cadmium red next week. Because if I can't, you know, I'll just go out and get some red iron oxide or something and make my own. But or use whatever is left. I got a lot of stuff left, so I'm not worried about that. You know, the whole art gallery and the retailing of art is a whole separate issue, and that's on another planet. And guitar strings, well, you know, when I wrote my novel, World Made by Hand, and by the way, Michael, the sequel,
yes,
to World Made by Hand, called,
yes,
The Witch of Hebron, came out in October.
Yes.
And so there are two of them now that are set in, two novels set in the post oil, post-collapse American future. But in that book...
Where's my copy?
Well, I'll send you one. I didn't... You know, you were on the list. But, you know, this is actually interesting that you should raise that, because it's an indication of how incompetent publishers have become. You know, they've gotten so bad at doing the marketing of books that if you send them a list of people to send it to, they just won't do it, you know, or they'll just forget.
Okay, we've got some more calls backed up here, so...
But now, let me say something about
sure.
In my book, World Made by Hand, there was an emphasis on people making their own music, because canned entertainment isn't available anymore. And there's quite a bit of discussion about how they make do with strings for musical instruments when they're hard to get.
Do you have any books that you would recommend dealing with making your own oil paints or
A lot of technical books out there that are manuals for art materials, and I would just look that up on the web.
You don't have any that you would specifically recommend?
I would, but you know, I'm sitting here on a phone with a cord on it, and it's across the office, and I can't actually see the title.
Okay. Well, you guys, I just want to thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We're going to take one more call before we go to break, and then we'll come back and do a new white trash song, very appropriate to what's going on. But we've got Kim from New York. Are you there?
Hello?
Kim, are you there?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we certainly can. You're on the air with me and Jim Kunstler.
Okay. Question for either of you. I heard an investigative journalist, Greg Palast, say the other day that even though there's no more $2 a barrel oil, which he's not denying peak oil, but he's saying the most expensive oil that's being drawn up is in Venezuela, and it's $30 a barrel. So cartels are controlling, and other financial factors are controlling the price. Do you worry that...
I heard that, and I don't believe it for a moment.
I don't either.
I thought he was talking out of
his butt. It's nonsense.
I saw him on Max Kaiser, I thought it was the most incoherent discussion of the oil situation that I've heard in a long time.
Ditto.
But, I mean, do you ever worry that, like, generating concern about peak oil, which is a legitimate...
I don't worry about what Greg Palast said, because I don't believe a word of it. It seemed completely incoherent to me.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay. We've got time for... we will do the new white trash song after the break now. Messiah from Brooklyn, are you there? You have a question about the crisis? What?
Yeah, hey, what's going on?
Hey, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm all right. Hello?
Okay. Who just hung up?
Not me.
Okay.
Not
Jim's
me, I'm
there.
Here.
All right, man. What's up?
Hey, so I just got a question. Like, I live in the city, you know, it's like it's too late, you know, to be going out there and buying a farm and trying to learn how to grow, you know, vegetables. So what can I do as a person living in the city, you know, unemployment is higher than what you see in the average nationally, you know? What can I do?
You could hire yourself out to somebody else who's growing vegetables.
Yeah. So how can I do as an individual in my community to help, you know, help them come to deal with public safety, potential rioting of food shortages and stuff like that? What can I do, you know?
Well, the first thing that you need to do is you need to find other people with their heads removed from a certain body part in your neighborhood who are close to you, because this is not, this is a meal that Rodney Allen Rippey, it's an old commercial for Burger King, used to say, it's too big to eat by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, Jim?
Yeah. I'm here.
What do you think he ought to do?
Hello? What do I think he ought to do?
Yeah.
Well,
what do
you know, I think you're absolutely right that you've got to very deliberately find a way to make yourself part of a community, and probably in a very physical way. You know, you need to move to a place that is the kind of place that is liable to have, you know, better prospects in the years ahead. And, I just happen to think that our very large metroplex cities are going to become rather disorderly. It doesn't mean that they're going to go up in flames, but I think they're going to have a hard time with services and a hard time with their economies, and that they just might not be a very good place to be. So, I made my decision 30 years ago when I moved to a Main Street town in upstate New York, you know, and I think other people should consider things like that.
One of the things you can do also is go to my website, collapsenet.com. There are some things there that we have a membership, but a lot of the stuff there is free. And one of the things that's there is called the Lighthouse Directory, with more than, it's 1,090, very specifically hand-picked listings on how you can educate yourself, how you can connect with other people. You can get involved with Transition U.S. There are transition initiatives all around you. That's the first thing I would do. You want to go take a look at CollapseNet. But it's really all about having people close to you who can help you, and you can help them. We've got a ton of calls backing up here. We've got about 3 minutes before the break. It's great, Jim. You're a very popular guy. Here's a question.
Shit.
Here's a question from Kathleen Schilt to you. I'm looking for both of your thoughts, okay, on everything going on in the Middle East. It looks like civil unrest could potentially lead to democracy. I don't think so. How do you see this impacting Collapse and U.S. oil? Jim?
Oh, the unrest?
Yeah.
In the world?
Yeah.
For one thing, I wouldn't necessarily assume that this is going to lead to democratic outcomes.
I wouldn't either.
What most revolutions lead to is turmoil that continues for quite a while. And the direct implication of turmoil in that part of the world is that sooner or later we're going to have trouble with our oil imports, because that's where a lot of them come from. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So, you know, that's the main implication for me.
Yeah, I see no democracy coming out of this at all. What I see is after the French Revolution, when centuries of pent-up rage were released, we had what was called the Reign of Terror, which was chaos. And that was in a world that hadn't depleted essential resources. There will be no going back to prosperity for anybody. Nobody's life is going to get any better economically from here on out. There's no politician that can promise to make things better, because we have passed the point of no return. The world economy is collapsing all around us, and so is the world climate. Gee, that's a really cheery way to go into the break here, but we are going to go into the station break now. We'll be right back after a break at the bottom of the hour and get to the rest of your questions for Jim Kunstler. Roll it.
This way. Pull down your veil. From one line, you hold on your hand for the nightingale. Socrates imagined what Aristotle blurred, and Plato never said he really knew for sure if M is really A. Hold out your hand. Said he really knew for sure if A was really A. Hold out your hand for the nightingale.
mouth of this great cave. Giant, inviting, forbidden. It is to do with shadow that scares us, drives us, haunts our waking sleep, places us in the hall of keel and rudder, in the drift of wind.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
This is PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
We got questions piling up all over the place here. I have one, Jim, from Kath Schilt, excuse me, it's about Wisconsin. You've been saying that states are going bankrupt, and this is what Wisconsin is going through now. Not really. No, it's not, because the law hasn't been passed in the House yet. However, there's a blog article from Forbes magazine drawing a connection between Wisconsin Governor Walker and the Koch brothers, stating that Walker is pushing the bill through because big business wants to exploit workers and turn more profits. Do you have any comment on that? Let me start on that, Jim. First of all, the pension funds have already been looted. These crimes have been occurring all over the country. This is a test case to run a blitzkrieg on collective bargaining all over the country, which is what is underway now. It's been happening at a breakneck pace, actually, since this began. Jim, what are you at?
Well, I don't think it will be a war against collective bargaining other than for public employees.
Yes, correct.
But because the union movement itself is really so moribund that it really probably is mainly the public employees who will be affected.
Right. And they're extremely vocal. And I've seen some commentary from union leaders around the country indicating that they're aware that these are hard times and they're willing to share the burden. I think that's I hope they stay with that.
Now, whether the Koch brothers or Koch brothers, however you pronounce their name, you know, whether they're behind any of this, you know, we do know that that these billionaire financial guys have been behind an awful lot of Tea Party stuff and right-wing Republican stuff. And, you know, they're out there. They're using their wealth to affect people's political lives, and they're very, very quiet about it. And by the way, this is coming from someone who likes to say he's allergic to conspiracy theories. That's me, you know. But I do believe that these guys are working a lot of hoodoo behind the scenes with their money.
Yep. Here's a question from Rodney Thomas. One, your most recent prediction is dire. Complete total collapse within 6 months and greater likelihood of nuclear war. Get those potassium iodide capsules. Even for those of us who are preparing, please discuss how we are supposed to react to and act upon such dire predictions of immediate catastrophe. Let's deal with one and then we'll come back to two. Nicole Foss.
Yeah, by the way, that was your prediction.
Yes.
I think things are pretty gnarly, but that wasn't the particular prediction that I made.
Yeah. Okay, clear. Nicole Foss was on the show a couple months ago. I love her, Stone Lake. She writes for Automatic Earth, and you know, we've had her and Chris Martinson, some really cool people on the show.
Yeah, I've met her. I met her up in Ottawa a couple of years ago.
She made a great point. She said, do not worry about what's going to kill you on Friday when it's Monday. You worry about what's going to kill you on Tuesday first. You deal with one problem at a time. And my analysis is very clear that the most imminent challenge any of us are going to have to face in this country is civil unrest. Serious, serious, violent civil unrest in major cities, probably first, hopefully exclusively. But in context with what's happening around the world, from Bolivia to Bahrain, and, you know, maybe soon in Ireland. I'd love to see the Irish go up. This is a consciousness thing. That this is a quickening all over the planet right now. And I agree with what Jim said earlier in the show that this really feels like this could just go totally sideways in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and you know one way it would go sideways in the USA is if this unrest really disables the oil supply to the USA. It would almost automatically disable the food delivery system to the supermarkets. And once that happens in the USA, really all bets are off about how people are going to behave. And I don't think people really appreciate the fragility of those systems.
Yes. Oh, overly complex systems. Yeah. Somebody else who I met recently was Commander Dick Marcinko, who was the founder of SEAL Team 6. And he has a great tirade on over complex things, especially civilizations, organizations, etc.
And by the way, you know what I just described about the oil and food systems isn't even that complex. It's a fairly direct relationship. You know, if you can't get oil and you can't get diesel fuel and the refineries don't get what they need, you know, the trucks ain't going to be running. And we don't have any other way of delivering our stuff around. You know, we have a national chain, just-in-time supermarket food system. It's complex enough, but it's not so complex that, you know, the average person can't understand the relationships in that.
I remember Colin Campbell. You and I have been with Colin many times. We've known him for years. I love the man. Used to say that this was like six years ago. God, we've been at this for a while, Jim. That there was no elasticity left anywhere in the system. And then he was referring to oil prices. But I think what we're talking about now in terms of the strains on our society is there's no elasticity left in anything, like even the simple food chain and the food supply to your grocery store.
Yeah, so we've actually been spending the elasticity out of it. That's what really, it's really what all of our debt behavior represents, is taking whatever surplus wealth and whatever surplus room to maneuver that we had in our culture and spending it away until we were really boxed in.
Hey, the Chinese only have to make 41,000 cars a day now to keep up growth. I mean, here's the second question from Roddy Thomas. This is for me, had a bad time in Ashland. Yeah, I did. But still, if you expect total collapse, and even with your survival training, why stay in an urban area? Isn't Jim's vision of reviving small town life the way to go? Absolutely is the way to go. I do have plans, and I'm starting to move on those plans. Basically, my plans involve a boat, and that's all I'm talking about on the radio. Jim's got the right idea.
Are you moving in with Dimitri?
No, his boat's too small. We would be laughing a lot. You know, that's
I think so.
That's the other thing I'm really grateful for, Jim. You know, I look back and I I am just so grateful for all the incredible people that I've met along the way. And we have met some dandies, haven't we?
Yeah, I had dinner with Dmitry. I met him for the first time. Dmitry Orlov, by the way, the author of Reinventing Collapse, a wonderful book written by a guy who grew up in the Soviet Union, moved to the USA when he was in junior high school or something, and then returned to work in the post-Soviet Union when he was a grown computer programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a wonderful book comparing the predicament of the late Soviet Union during the collapse era and the situation here in the United States. And it's really a wonderfully funny book, too. He's got a wonderfully mordant sense of humor.
I was the first to ever publish him at From the Wilderness.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We published that whole Reinventing Collapse before it was Reinventing Collapse. And
Did it crack you up when you first saw it?
Oh, my God.
It was really
quite
funny.
I just said, I don't know who this guy is, but we're what do I have to do? And he's been one of the great lights with us along the way. And I know you probably miss Matt Simmons too. And you know,
yeah, I do. I'm sorry that he's gone. And but you know, there are a lot of troops left out there.
And we carry on. There's a call now from Jan in New York asking about God on the Table and some other things. Jan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Jim and Mike, I'm an Episcopal priest, and I'm concerned particularly about the role of religious institutions in getting the word out about what's going to be confronting us,
mm-hmm.
How religions can maintain their integrity and still be able to tell people what to do.
This goes to the heart of the article that I wrote, God on the Table, on CollapseNet, saying that in this epical time of human history, everything is on the table. Everything is going to be questioned, and I cheer it, although it's a little scary going into it. I have been part of, and I'm witnessing a great spiritual awakening, which has to do largely with return to native spirituality, that which existed before the God of Abraham came along,
mm-hmm.
and there's a great awakening taking place there. But I think one thing I want to say is not so much about religions, and I think organized religions now are basically useless at best, and maybe impediments at worst because of the way they're not doing anything, but I don't know. I'm liking what I'm seeing. I'm seeing an awakening. But I've had guests on like Waldrop, Bob Waldrop from Running on Empty Groups, and next week I have the guy who runs the Survival Blog. Both are Christian, very devout. One's Catholic, the other's a Calvinist. But all they care about is helping people, and that's what makes the difference to me. It doesn't make any difference about where a person comes from spiritually.
Yeah, and you know, that's quite a contrast to the sort of prosperity theology of the Southern evangelicals, which I think has gone a long way toward discrediting that kind of religion. In my own books, the novels that I wrote that take place in post-collapse America, religion really is, not religion, but the church is actually rather important, because there's nothing left for people to organize their life around except membership in this institution. But what I depicted in my books was kind of a clash between evangelicals and sort of ordinary citizens who, in my case, belonged to a congregational church and weren't particularly pious, but they did... They did organize their lives around the church because it was the only magnet for their community, with the demise of corporate life and the school system and all the other things that we tend to hang our life on.
And that was what was captivating to me about World Made by Hand.
Well, thank you.
That you had talked about that as an organizing principle, and that's been the case in the civil rights movement. It's been the case historically. That many times, for whatever faults we have, and goodness knows we do, the fact of the matter is people still do come to churches, they still do look to those institutions as a kind of a touchstone,
mm-hmm.
for their lives, particularly in times of crisis. We saw that with Hurricane Katrina. My question is, I also, full disclosure, I'm a part Native American, so the Native culture and the idea of reverence for the earth is also something that's very dear to me, and it's dear to me as a Christian as well. So I'm kind of how to get into this without, I'm trying to figure out how to get into this while still being true to what I am, you know, in my faith, but
well, I was raised in a completely non-religious household.
Yeah.
So I don't have any particular thoughts or feelings about organized religion. I tend to steer clear of it. I do think that, like everything else in human history, these institutions have their good times and their worst times. You know, there are times when organized Christianity does good things, and there are times when it does terrible things. And now it's sort of just doing a whole lot of nothing, standing by, and supporting things like Las Vegas and easy money, and I don't think that's very appealing.
I don't think
the Episcopalians are doing that, but I do think that the Southern Evangelicals are doing that.
Yeah.
I know that there are people who are starting to revolt against that and drop out of it and start their own organizations, but for now, I think that American Christianity has become a kind of a dubious project.
As I was listening to this great exchange, I was having a War of the Worlds moment. There's a scene in the movie War of the Worlds. I like the 1954 version better with Gene Barry.
Yeah.
Where all the scientists have done all of their things, and people, as a last refuge, were trying to touch the horns of the altar, if you will, to ask for sanctuary and mercy. But what happened? It was little bacteria that killed the Martians. In other words, it was nature.
Yeah.
And what we're dealing with here is the fact from I've had a long time of spiritual study too, and many years, three solid decades, and is that we are running up against the fact that the laws of the universe are immutable, and those laws were created by whatever created us. And those are the things that are going to win now. That's going
to
determine the outcome.
You do have to get right with that stuff somehow.
Yeah,
we really do. We really do.
One of the things that I did a couple of summers ago was to take a permaculture design course and become a certified permaculture designer, with the idea that, as we're talking about in my profession, congregational development, we need to talk about it in an organic way, and we need to talk about earth care and people care and fair share, those principles of permaculture. And what I would like to see is to introduce those principles, the principles that the transition networks are using, the things that you're talking about, Mike, and the things that you're talking about, Jim, and I've introduced it into my preaching little by little, just to try to get a feel for how people will react. And there's been some response. It just depends on kind of what the daily news is. And I know in the last few weeks, as we've had Egypt and Wisconsin and all kinds of other things, people are sort of perking up their ears. So
Jan,
maybe there's a chance that we can play a significant role in organized religion.
Well, get her done.
Yeah.
Okay, we're working on it.
Jan, I really want to thank you. We've got a few more questions I'd like to get in before the end of the show. But, Jan, thank you so much for that call. That was a real steak dinner.
All right, good.
I just want to remind everybody that next week our guest is Jim Rawls of SurvivalBlog.com. Jim's a former Army intelligence officer. He has got one of the hottest blogs from all of our readers, a great store of knowledge and resources. We're going to have Jim as a guest on next week. And now let's go back and see what we can get to these last couple of questions. Mike and Jim, I'm a CollapseNet member from Blacksburg, Virginia. My sincere gratitude to both of you for your high-quality work. I've read Jim's book, The Long Emergency. I've also read both of Mike's books and watched the movie Collapse. I also follow Richard Heinberg, Carolyn Baker, and Dmitry Orlov. Yeah, it's the gang. I am currently a PhD student in mechanical engineering at Virginia Tech. I spend my time trying to gain a better understanding of complex fluid systems using supercomputers. Okay, my question is, what is the future of big research universities, Jim, you're going to like this, in science and engineering in the USA? Go ahead, Jim.
I don't think they have very bright prospects. I think that
the disappearance of capital is going to make it very hard for these institutions to survive at the scale that
yes.
they have elaborated themselves to. You can state categorically, I think, that anything organized at the giant scale is going to get into trouble in an era of capital and resource scarcity. So I don't expect big organizations like, the Illinois State University or, anything like that to really be able to sustain itself. I wouldn't put a whole lot of my effort, and I wouldn't invest a lot of my emotions and thoughts in the survival of those systems.
Yeah, the law of entropy says that things break down, not up, that the more complex things get, the more concentrated energy there is in them. And as they break down, the more concentrated energy, the faster they release. So these projects are like the pinnacle of complexity in human civilization.
And, I've been around to a lot of them in the last 10 years, and maybe you have too. And, I'm really very impressed with the grandiosity of their, for example, their building schemes,
Yes.
I remember going to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor about 3 years ago and seeing their new biotech building. This thing was the size of an aircraft carrier. And, it was all jazzed up with all of the latest sort of green gimmickry. But I don't think they really have any idea how they would heat a building like that in 10 years.
No. I don't either.
Because mainly all the green is really greenwash. So, and, I just don't see these schools being able to persevere, at that scale. They're going to either have to get smaller, real small, real quick, or they're just going to kind of seize up and end up on their backs.
It's kind of like Easter Island, building all these useless monuments right as you go extinct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they should have painted faces on them.
Got a question from Bill Stacy to the Lifeboat Hour. Just one question. Will the nuclear power plants of the world remain stabilized since they are very expensive to maintain? My understanding is that if left unmanned, most will emit radiation. Yes, you're right. Jim, go ahead.
Well, I think Nicole Foss actually had the best rap on this, which is that, if we do become a capital-starved society, a society that doesn't have enough money to run stuff,
mm-hmm.
We're going to have trouble paying people, and we're going to find ourselves in a very similar position to the people in the old Soviet Union who, they had people working in these very sensitive, giant, dangerous machines that nuclear reactors are. And they weren't being paid very well, and some of them had to have outside jobs, and they were drinking a lot, and, they were being poorly paid, and they were irresponsible and sort of full of grievance for how they were being treated.
Yes.
And you can't, you got to have an extremely stable society to run a nuclear energy system. That's unfortunately the way it is. Now, I have never been categorically against the idea of nuclear because I thought that was the only way we'd keep the lights on in 20 years. But I think Nicole is right. I think that we're not going to have the money or the social cohesion to keep running them.
Jim, tell us about your blog and where you write and where people can find out more about you.
My blog comes out every Monday morning like clockwork. I'm very dedicated to making sure it gets done.
In German.
At kunstler.com, which is KUNSTLER.com. And, it's right there on the top of the page, and you just click on it, and it comes right up.
There you go.
After about 9:30 in the morning.
After about
Eastern time.
Eastern time, yes. We've got about 5 minutes left. I just want to share.
Where are you on the nuke issue?
Where am I on the nuke issue? Yes, they're, obviously they're going to fail. And they're going to fail in different stages and different degrees. No nuclear power plants will ever be built again. We're
well,
done.
Well, it sure doesn't look like that's going to happen the way we're going now.
No, no.
I mean, we're not even talking about it.
Yeah, the incubation period is 13 years, and there's no money.
And if you're talking about it.
Yeah, and so, no, and yes, I do think that we will see a lot of destabilization, hopefully. The lights will go on for the leaders of the world to admit what it is that we are facing and to begin to deal with it so that decisions that will be critical to future generations and perhaps all life on the planet can be made from the standpoint about how do we render these things safe as human civilization kind of hits the brick wall. These are the kind of questions that should be being addressed by world leaders now, Jim. This is... you know, they can't continue to make promises that they're going to restore something that is obviously dying all around us.
Well, my guess is that, you know, what we are doing and what we're seeing out there is we are mounting a massive campaign to sustain the unsustainable. That has been our political response to this set of problems and predicaments. And it's very unfortunate. You know, we're really just doing everything we can to you know, keep the status quo going. And then, you know, there's a whole other range of wishing and sort of delusional thinking out there on the part of people who think we're going to run Walmart and the interstate highways on by other means.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's really part of the campaign to sustain the unsustainable. And they're just going to, you know, we're going to be disappointed about how that works out. Now, that's not an invitation to be depressed. It's an invitation to become realistic and understand that the mission is, there's three things in this mission: to relocalize your economy as much as possible, to downscale the major systems in your life, and to manage contraction intelligently.
Excellent. James Howard Kunstler, we are out of time. This has been a great hour. I hope to have you back again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. You're one of my heroes. And you're also cute, too.
Well, thanks a lot. You are, too, and I'll be glad to come back.
I love it, Jim. Thank you so much. We will be back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Keep your fingers crossed, your powder dry, and check with us on CollapseNet. You never know what's coming next. Good night.